Hey everybody, good morning. Pastor Joe here. So glad that you could join me online for my message this morning. I'm going to start off things a little bit differently today. I've got a clip to show you guys. I stumbled upon this really cute commercial I just wanted to show you, so check it out. Storytelling in that commercial is absolutely phenomenal. It has all of the emotion of a Pixar movie in a minute and 19 seconds. It's an emotional journey that of laughter and sadness and happiness. But let me ask you a question. What do you know about the phone after that commercial? What makes it different from other smartphones? And do you even remember what the name of the smartphone was in that commercial? Probably not. And yet while the commercial told us absolutely nothing about the phone itself, about the actual product, it actually communicated far more than you're probably aware of. You know, it communicated that people who love and have a desire to connect with others choose Samsung. If you buy a Samsung phone, you too will be able to experience that feeling of love and connection that you felt vicariously through our little friend, the spider. Because the phone and the spider are an odd couple. It speaks strongly to people who feel out of place and disconnected. It also promises this feel-good unity that no matter who you love, it's okay, even if it's not traditional. Forward-thinking individuals buy Samsung phones, or so the narrative goes. This ad also aired on Valentine's Day, preying on the longing of single people who want a loving, romantic relationship. Now, I know I just ruined that commercial for you. Don't worry. My wife tells me that I ruin all of her favorite songs and movies too. I'm just an absolute joy to be around. But here's the point. Advertising is propaganda designed to manipulate our two most basic emotions, I want and I fear. I want the connection that spider had, and I fear his loneliness. And the solution is obvious, just buy a new smartphone, right? What through advertising, not only are we being told how to think, we're also being told how to feel. Advertising is designed to continually stoke the fire of desire in each and every one of us. It manipulates our emotions by bypassing the logical center of our brains and going straight for those base animal desires. And these desires is actually what the Bible calls the flesh. And if you tuned in last week to our first series in our Money Talks, we learned that money and possessions can never buy happiness, let alone love. And when we look to money and possessions to buy us happiness and security, we have made it our God. And the only way to make sure that your money serves you and not the other way around is to submit to the Lordship of Jesus. In the words of Jesus, you cannot serve God and be enslaved to money. Today we're going to, is where the rubber hits the road. We're going to talk about how to manage your money. How do we manage our money in a way that honors God with this relentless, unending call for consumerism, to buy more, to gather more, to spend more money? Well, this morning I want to talk about how to manage money. I'm not going to be giving investment tips or financial planning advice. I'm going to leave that to the experts. Instead, we're going to approach managing money from a values-based perspective. Think of this as financial advice for your soul. See, the fact of the matter is that we cannot effectively manage money with disordered desires, not in a way that honors God, at any rate. And today's verse is 1 Timothy 6:6. At the beginning of the series, I promised three verses that will totally change how you view and handle money. And this verse has really struck a chord with me over the last few years. It's a verse that I try to live by, and if I'm being honest with you, I do better some days than others. But here it is. 1 Timothy 6:6, I don't even need to read it. It's this: yet true godliness with contentment is itself great wealth. That's it. It's almost too simple. And yet it's often the simplest commands in Scripture that are the hardest to follow, aren't they? Let's dig in a little bit on this verse. The first thing that you need to do when reading the Bible is you need to ask yourself, you know, what is the context that this verse finds itself in? Where is it? What argument is it in the middle of this letter? Where is it in the whole of the Bible? Well, if we take a look at the text, we see that this verse, in this particular context, this verse is in a letter from the Apostle Paul to Timothy, a young pastor. And the letter really addresses how to lead a church, how to be a godly man, a godly leader. And a big part of it is talking about false teachers, how to recognize them, warnings against becoming a false teacher yourself. And verse 6:6 is placed in the middle of a larger instruction to watch out for these preachers who are using their platform to get rich, and to resist the urge to do the same. And so first and foremost, this verse is actually for pastors, for preachers, for evangelists, right? For people who stand up on a stage and tell you about God. And so what that means is that the next time a preacher tells you that they want to buy a jet, you can keep your money guilt-free. But yet this command is not just for preachers. It also happens to be a great way to live. And Paul lays out two traits that work in tandem. They need to work in unity in order to make a wealthy person. The first trait is godliness. Do you know what the definition of godliness is? Practical piety. I just think that is a fantastic definition. In other words, godliness isn't simply adopting a set of beliefs. It's not a mental assent to a certain theology or way of thinking, right? Godliness here is where rubber hits the road. It's faith with shoes on. Godliness happens when we apply faith to find meaning in the mundane tasks of life. And this is why when people have a spending problem, or well, maybe a hoarding problem, but usually it's a spending problem, right? When people have a spending problem, what they actually have is a spiritual problem. Because you're being ruled by the disordered desires of your flesh, by I want, I need, I fear, instead of being led by the Spirit. And so that's what godliness. Godliness is practical piety. It's living out your faith in everyday life. Secondly, contentment is when you can confidently say, I don't need more to be happy. I don't need more to be happy. I have what I need. It's enough. That's it. And so godliness with contentment is finding our happiness and our security in Jesus. It's actually experiencing what we all say that we believe. And so the Bible says that if we have godliness with contentment, we are wealthy, even if you're poor. And I can guarantee you that if you can learn the secret of being content in every situation, you will be more wealthy than the richest person who has everything. But here's the problem. Our contentment muscles have atrophied in a culture of consumerism. You know, when you go to the hospital and you're on bed rest for a long time, for months on end, and you have to get up and learn to walk again because your muscles have atrophied. They've lost their strength. Well, in a culture of consumerism, our contentment muscles have atrophied. We've become so accustomed to giving in that we simply can't just be content. We have to exercise our contentment muscles day in and day out, over and over again. Constant repetition until contentment becomes a habit, a way of life. And so this morning, I want to give you three contentment exercises. I call these the ABCs of contentment. Are you ready? Here we go. Here's the first one. Adopt minimalism. You know, when most people think about minimalism, I'm willing to bet your mind probably went to one of two places. The first, if you're like my wife, when you think of minimalism, you think of a design style, right? You think of open concept, white walls, black accent, very, very uncluttered, right? Just these beautiful designed homes and things like that. Right? If you're like me, you probably think about that vlogger on YouTube or whatever who wears the same thing every day, lives in a small apartment, and meticulously counts every single item that they have so they can brag about how little they have. Well, here to tell you, I'm actually not talking about either of these things. I'm talking simply about learning to live with less. And I don't know about you, but clutter really stresses me out. If I'm writing a sermon or working in my office and it gets a little too cluttered, I can't think straight. I have to pause and clean it up a little bit. Otherwise, I get too distracted. If I'm at home and there's little piles of things everywhere, it kind of raises my anxiety. It stresses you out. And I know I'm not the only one. Right? I also don't know if you've noticed, but it also seems like the more that you have, the more you have to have to take care of the things you have. And the more we accumulate things, the more things begin to control us, the more that we need to spend time maintaining or repairing or taking care of those things. And so when we talk about living with less, right, we have to ask ourselves, okay, what's our benchmark here? Right, if we continue to read Paul's exhortation to Timothy in verse 8, he says this, "So if we have enough food and clothing, let us be content." You know, that's that's an interesting thought, isn't it? Right, you mean that I don't need my Nespresso machine? I don't need my golf clubs or all of my things? Right, remember Jesus' words from last week? Life is not measured by how much you own. You know, it's incredible how much of a burden so much of the stuff we accumulate actually becomes. Right, have you ever noticed that when you give something away or, you know, even throw it out, you actually feel a little bit lighter? Almost like you're free. Almost, you know, man, I don't have to worry about that anymore. I don't have to think about that anymore. I don't have to spend time on that anymore. And the whole purpose of living with less is actually to get rid of the distractions so you can focus on living your life And if you're a follower of Jesus, that means focusing on living his plan for your life instead of worrying about and taking care of all of these things. But how do you get started with living with less? Well, I've got a couple points here from John Mark Comer. He wrote a great book called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And here are a couple of his hints for living with less. Never impulse buy. You know, if I'm honest with you, I don't think I've ever felt good about an impulse buy. Usually you feel pretty rotten about it afterwards. When you do buy, opt for less and better things. Before you buy something, ask yourself, what is the true cost of this item? Right? If you're buying a vehicle, the true cost of the item is not the price tag. The true cost of the item is the price tag and the insurance and the gas and the maintenance and the tires and all of those things and the time that it takes and, right? Calculate the true cost of an item before just diving in there. Number four, get in the habit of giving things away. And not just your junk either, right? Don't just look through your house and be like, oh, this thing's bugging me, I should get rid of this. No, get in the habit of actually giving away things that you like, things that are important to you. Number five, Marie Kondo that thing. I don't know if you're familiar with Marie Kondo, but she has this TV series, and I don't agree with everything on there, but she does this thing where she has people go through, people who are hoarders, go through their stuff and grab something and has them ask the question, does this spark joy? Does this item actually add anything to my life, or is it just bring more stress? That's a pretty great question to ask yourself. It's one I use all the time in decluttering is, does this actually bring me any joy, or is this just causing me a headache? So there you go. I could give you more, but I don't want to overwhelm you with all kinds of content. So let's just go on to our second exercise in the ABCs. So the first one is adopt minimalism. That's the A. The B is budget what you believe. According to financial guru Dave Ramsey, a budget is you telling your money where it should go, right? If you don't budget, your money will just slip through your fingers like water, and you'll come to the end of the month and you'll be like, where did it all go, right? We've all been there. And our money talk last week really got me thinking about this, right? You know, what would happen if you allowed the values of the kingdom to decide where your money goes? Because currently, right, what many people do is that their values decide where their money goes, instead of allowing God to shape our values to align with his, right? We talked about how, last week, we talked about how the only way to not become enslaved to money is actually to submit your money to God. And if godliness is practical piety, then this should be our first step, telling our money where it needs to go so it aligns with kingdom values. And I'm not just talking about tithing either, right? I'm a pastor, and people are like, oh, he's talking about money. He wants us to tithe. Yes, I want you to tithe. I believe God will bless you for that. But this is much bigger than that, okay? Think about it this way. Generosity. It's a kingdom value. Is your budget generous? Or is it all about accumulating more for yourself? Right, the Bible talks a lot about the wisdom of saving, especially in the book of Proverbs. So, are you saving wisely? The Bible also says that savings, like spending, can also be a way to be selfish. Storing away treasures where moth and rust destroy, to use Jesus' word, right? And so instead of being selfish for today, you're being selfish for tomorrow. And so beware of the trap of thinking that just because you're saving, you're actually aligned with a kingdom value, right? Saving for the future doesn't necessarily mean that your heart is in the right place. The Bible also teaches us to be good stewards with everything that God has given us, and that would include finances, right? Have you wisely invested your money? Right? When we look at finances through the lens of godliness, it's amazing how much it can shift our priorities. You know, next week we're going to talk about the kingdom value of generosity. But I want to take a quick minute right now just to talk a little bit more about the importance of savings. Saving is deferred gratification, right? It's the marshmallow test for adults, right? Is everyone familiar? Are you familiar with the marshmallow test? If you're not, basically they did this study several years ago. Everyone is an adult now. And they took a bunch of small children and they put them in a room with a marshmallow. And they said, look, if you want, you can eat this marshmallow right now, but I'm going to go and get another marshmallow. And if I come back and this marshmallow is here, you can actually have two marshmallows. The adult leaves the room. And the child just sits there, you know, with the marshmallow on the table, and you get to watch this video of these little children just, you know, squirming in their seats, having this internal dialogue with themselves about whether or not to take the marshmallow. And like I said, all of these children are now adults, and there is a high correlation, like high correlation, that the children who waited longer or who did not eat the marshmallow performed much better in life by a huge margin. So saving is a strong sign of contentment, right? It's the willingness to do less with now so I can have what I need for tomorrow. And so let me ask you the question, what does your budget look like? Right, because I hate to be the one to break it to you, but what you spend your money on shows what you actually value, right? We all say that we value certain things, but if you want to know what you really value, look where your money is going, right? You already budget what you believe. And maybe it's time to let God shape those beliefs. You know, one final word about budgeting is give yourself grace, right? You're not going to have whole new priorities overnight. It's an exercise, right? It takes repetition and going over and over again, right? Continually submitting yourself and to God and saying, look, hey, it's a brand new month. It's a brand new day. Let's work on this together. So we have our A. Adopt minimalism. It's all about living with less. We've got our B, right? Budget what you believe. Allow the kingdom to set your financial priorities. And finally, C, cheerfully revolt against consumerism. The C in our ABCs is really about calling out the lie. Calling out the lie of consumerism, right? A new Samsung smartphone won't connect me to loved ones any more than my two-year-old smartphone will. Right? A vacation on white sandy beaches with palm trees and a beautiful resort is not going to rekindle the passion with my wife. What is going to rekindle the passion in your marriage is hard work and communication and not being selfish and loving one another. Right? The new car is not going to make me feel any more confident or in charge. The bigger house is not going to solve all of my problems. Right? The best way to combat a lie is with truth. Godliness with contentment is itself great wealth. Right? Another great piece of advice from Dave Ramsey is live below your means. I think most of us probably live above our means. Right? Scraping by from paycheck to paycheck. But give yourself permission to live with less. And I know that your friends or your neighbors will, you know, make passive-aggressive comments and you'll feel like less because you don't have as much as everyone else, right? Maybe that your friends will brag about what they have and you'll wish that you had it too. Let them have it. Let them have all the things. It's okay. You don't need it. You know, I remember when I first got into golf, I bought into the lie, right? The lie that new clubs would improve my golf game. And so I saved and I researched and I bought a brand new set of clubs and I went out to the driving range and I discovered the painful truth that the problem with my golf swing was not the clubs. That all along, the problem was actually with the golfer. And at the beginning of my message this morning, I mentioned that a spending problem is a spiritual problem. Right? When we spend and we spend and we spend, hoping to fix our problems or to fill that emptiness or whatever, it's really a sign that there's something wrong with us. Right? We so often get caught up in the lie that the solution to whatever we're facing is more, better, different. Right? The problem is I don't have enough golf clubs. Nope, that wasn't it. Maybe the problem must be that I need better golf clubs. Nope, still a terrible golfer. I must need different golf clubs. Or, hear me out for a second, I could cultivate contentment. I could lead a cheerful revolt against consumerism by saying, I don't need anything else to be happy. Jesus is enough. Right? I'm just thankful to be out on this golf course on a beautiful sunny day. You know, here are a few more ways to lead a cheerful revolt against consumerism from our friend John Mark Comer. Learn to enjoy things without owning them. Cultivate a deep appreciation for creation. Cultivate a deep appreciation for the simple pleasures. Recognize advertising for what it is, propaganda, designed to stroke the unquenchable desire in our hearts. So, are you ready to exercise those contentment muscles? To manage your money in a way that honors God and brings peace instead of stress to your life? The only problem is this, is that it's basically impossible unless you join a hippie commune, right? We're surrounded with images and voices constantly berating us, telling us over and over that the answer is more, 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 right? The propaganda preys on our emotions and our weaknesses, our flesh. And how can we learn to live in contentment against such overwhelming odds? Well, there's a well-known verse, and many of you will know it well. It's been put on mugs and greeting cards and t-shirts and tattoos and inspirational posters. It's this. It says, "For I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength." Philippians 4:13. And this verse is a great reminder that no matter what difficulty you're facing, no matter how difficult or tough life gets, we can always lean on Jesus. But what's fascinating about this verse, though, is what the author, what the Apostle Paul is talking about. He's not talking about great persecution. He's not talking about, you know, insurmountable difficulties and all of these kinds of things. What he's actually talking about is contentment. If we back up just one verse, we get a fuller picture of what Paul is talking about. "I know how to live on almost nothing or with everything. I've learned the secret of living in every situation, whether it is with a full stomach or empty, with plenty or little, for I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength." Christ gives us the strength to be content. The answer is not more, the answer is less, because Jesus is enough. He's always been enough. Well, he will always be enough. Godliness with contentment is great wealth. Would you pray with me? Dear Heavenly Father, I thank you so much for all of the ways that you bless us, for the comfort that you've given us. But we know that comfort that you give us can sometimes cripple. And so we ask that you would cultivate in us a spirit of contentment, that we would recognize that you and you alone are the source of our joy and our happiness and our peace. Father, may we be content with little or plenty, whatever lot in life we find ourselves in. Let us not give in to the lie of more, but let us be content with what you've given us each and every day. Amen.